There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batcher. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. Bob, a very good evening to you. What is Retraction Watch? Thank you.
John, Retraction Watch is a website that was founded almost the same time I founded Behind the Black 13 years ago. And the goal of the two guys who run it is to document the number of papers that are retracted, peer review papers that are retracted by scientists or by journals because of bad work, dishonesty, fraud, mistakes, whatever. They just track every paper they get. gets retracted. And they published an op-ed recently in The Guardian in Britain where they noted, shockingly, that the number of scientific peer-reviewed papers that have been retracted each year since the beginning of this century in 2000 has increased yearly an astonishing 13,750%. They had 40 retractions worldwide in 2000. And in 22, they had 5,500. And following the science, scientific research world, as I do, there's no doubt that the number of errors, dishonesty, fraud, mistakes in science work has been increasing exponentially in the last quarter century to a point where it's now You cannot, and you must not take on faith any scientific paper you read, even if it's peer-reviewed. You once could do that, but you should not do that anymore. It should be questioned every sense. Now, of course, everything should always be questioned, but in the past, you could have faith that the science editors at journals in peer review were doing the proper due diligence so that if a paper got published, you at least know the science behind it was well done. And that ain't the case anymore. And this is a pretty shocking, big problem. It's a big problem worldwide. I think it's a much bigger, it's for us in America a bigger problem because it's so opposed to what the culture of our country used to be. And it indicates real rot within our academic community that has now resulted in a lot of scientists who see nothing wrong or are very easily willing to commit fraud or make mistakes of egregious nature in their science work. And this relates, by the way, to, we're talking about Starliner recently, where, you know, they made some egregious engineering mistakes, and it's the same kind of sloppiness in a sense, and it's disturbing, and it's something we as Americans here should address and look at coldly and fix.
Roscosmos. Not much to celebrate for the last year plus, but now they've launched successfully. What have they done?
I would say, John, they haven't had much to celebrate now for a quarter century. And in fact, it's been 47 plus years since the Russian / Soviet Union sent a planetary mission to the moon. Well, what they did launch here now is Luna 25, that's continuing the numbering system from the Soviet era. It's the first lunar lander since the 70s, and they launched it this week on a Soyuz 2 rocket. It's now on the way to the moon. They expect it to land on the moon in the high southern latitudes in Bogolyubsky Crater. I've got a map on Behind the Black that can show you where it will land, not far actually from where Chandrayaan 3 is going to land a few days later. Even though Chandrayaan 3 launched earlier, it's taking a much longer route to get to the moon. So Luna 25 will reach lunar orbit in just a few days, and then it'll spend a week or so in orbit adjusting the orbit, and then it'll attempt a landing. And so by the third week in August, we could have two different landers hit the moon, lands on the moon, we hope. Chandrayaan is a rover. It'll last for one lunar day. That's the daylight portion of the 14-long-day lunar day. Luna 25 is expected to last a year. It's not a rover. It will work at the spot it lands. It does have a robot scoop that's going to try to pull up material and analyze it. But we're beginning to look the continuous international colonization of the moon, John.
What is Denuri?
Denuri is a South Korean lunar orbiter. It's been in orbit now. It was launched a year ago, and it's been in orbit now, I would say, about, 10 months? And I posted a few images in the past from its ShadowCam American instrument, which is able to look into the permanently shattered areas in the South Pole. Haven't found any obvious ice yet. South Korea, to celebrate the anniversary of the launch, released a whole bunch of lunar images that were taken by Denuri's other cameras, and I linked to those images. Unfortunately, their press release is entirely in Korean, and so I know it was very difficult to find out really what specifics each image was taking. So I didn't post any specifics because I didn't really know much. But you can go look at the pictures. They're kind of cool, and it just shows you, once again, the international effort to colonize the moon is ongoing.
54th flight of Ingenuity, but now we've got a video of that flight taken by Perseverance. What have we learned, Bob?
We've got more than that. I mean, the two spacecrafts, the rover and the helicopter, were only about 200 feet apart when Ingenuity did its 54th flight. So not only did, and I predicted they would do this, not only did Perseverance take a video of the flight going up and down. It was just a hop up and down 16 feet. But Ingenuity, while it was up in the air, was able to get a picture of Perseverance on the ground. And so that's what we got. And it's really cool stuff to look at. That's really what it is. I don't know how much we really learned from this, other than it demonstrates the engineering works and worked, and it allows the science teams to see that engineering in operation, which is always useful for those people to do the work they need to do.
We go to Ingenuity because it's taking pictures of Perseverance. Have we learned anything from Ingenuity?
No, as I say, they just make pictures of each other. It helps the engineers know what's going on, and it's just cool stuff, John.
And Bob, is the picture, the camera on Ingenuity, is that first rate enough to do exploration if something happens on Perseverance?
Yes and no. It wasn't designed for the purpose of scouting, really. Remember, this was an engineering test that was supposed to last 30 days, do just a handful of flights, and prove that you could fly on Mars. Well, it's worked so well, they've been able to use it now significantly longer, from a few flights to over 50. And it's still functioning. So they do use it for some scouting of the ground for Perseverance. But it's not really designed for that. So this camera is not the highest resolution that they would want to put on a real scouting camera. Future helicopters, well, we'll see something quite different.
And now we go to Mars because we're looking for landing sites for SpaceX. We're way ahead of the skis, way over the skis right now, I think is the metaphor for people who do that. However,
I posted a few years ago the scoop that Starship, that SpaceX has been asking NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter to take pictures of an area on Mars called Arcadia Plantation. It's one of the northern lowland plains for a potential Starship landing site. And this is actually very close to where they originally were thinking of putting Dragon down many years ago. And so every once in a while, they'll post pictures of this region, and I will post them because it gives us a sense of what those first colonists on Mars were like. We see. And so here we have a picture of the Erebus Mountains, which are really almost right in the candidate landing zone. And I have a picture of one of those mountains with all ice features. There's lots of ice features here. In fact, one scientist has said you could stick a shovel in the ground to hit ice. This is near surface ice that's practically on the surface wherever you look. And that's one of the reasons SpaceX is interested in the area. And this is just a case of that. It's a case of a mounds that could conceivably actually be water, mud volcanoes, ice mud volcanoes. We're not sure of that, but it sure could be a possibility. And so
lava tubes in the area, Bob?
No, and we're not looking at lava here. We're definitely looking at water near a surface, very icy, impregnated ground in every way, shape, and form. And we're not, the mountains here are very, very small. We're only talking about 100 to 150 feet high. They're really like little hills. And even the bigger mountains, the Phalegra Mountains, that are about 500 miles to the to the west, where it's also a potential landing site for Starship. They're bigger, but once again, it's mostly ice that we see on, that's draping these mountains. So you're not going to get lava tubes, or at least you have to dig through ice a great distance to get to that.
The NASA probe Juno for Jupiter also takes pictures of Jupiter's moon. And there is a fabulous, and it's false color, I'm sure, but it gives it some proportions. Fabulous picture of the moon Io. It looks like a huge piece of it has been carved out, Bob. Is that a false image?
First, those are natural colors. They're enhanced, but this is what the colors of Io is. Io is a planet of volcanoes. Because of its near location orbit to Jupiter, the gravity of Jupiter subjects Io to a great deal of tidal stress. And the result of that is that the planet is covered with active volcanoes. These volcanoes continually send up plumes that are recorded, that are documented on from ground-based as well as planetary probes. And so what you're looking at is real color. You know, it's enhanced, but it's the colors, orange, black, and white. And the black splotches are mostly looking at either volcanoes or lava fields. And this picture from Juno, it's fuzzy because the camera was not part of the main science research of Juno. Juno's designed to study the atmosphere and interior of Jupiter. And the picture, the camera was a secondary thing added for public relations purposes. The scientist team doesn't even process those images. They just release them to the public, and any processed image you see, a citizen scientist has done it, and this is done by a guy named Thomas Thomopoulos, who I've posted some of his processed images in the past. He does a really nice job. You know, this is a flyby that took place end of July. There are going to be much closer flybys of Juno in December and February, getting down to under 1,000 miles of the surface, and we're going to get some, I think, really good pictures of those volcanoes at that time.
It looks like a scar. That's what I'm watching, Bob. Is that a carve out of the of the moon?
No, you're looking at lava. The black is like basalt, black, dark. And it looks like it's scarred because it's constantly being layered and covered with new lava flows. So this is a very... you think of Hawaii, but think of Hawaii exponentially larger and more active and covering an entire planet about the, what is it, I think about the size of the moon. It's active. Yes, it's ugly looking because it is active volcanoes.
Officially, the star is named Macho, who knows why, M-A-C-H-O, 80.7443.1718. There's an illustration accompanying it. What is the phenomenon about?
This is a very cool thing. This is a binary system. It's a star system that's binary. The two stars orbit each other very close, and for that reason, the gravitational pull from each affects each other. And the larger star is actually the less massive one. And so its mass is being pulled from it by the smaller, much more dense other star. And the process of that other star orbiting the larger star is that every time it zips past, it produces humongous tidal waves. This is kind of like Io in a sense. Humongous tidal waves on the star's surface. These tidal waves have heights three times higher, wider than the diameter of the sun. In other words, you can pile three suns on top of each other on the surface of this star to get an equivalence of the tidal waves that are flowing across the surface of this particular star. Well, it's a simulation, but it's based on the data, and it's just really amazing stuff, John.
And they don't mention any planets in this system, is that correct?
No, this is not a planet. It's planet binary systems, so far I've not produced many planets. It's not where you look.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. Going Space Engineering. I'm John Bell.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf. Thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agent Force, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.